Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Stories of near-death experiences fascinate us. Someone who nearly died reports moving through a tunnel of light or encountering a supernatural force. Others talk about seeing scenes from their lives flash before their eyes. Dr. Russell Noyce is an emeritus professor of psychiatry at the Carver College of Medicine at the University of Iowa, and he began collecting stories of near-death experiences in the 1970s, and his interest was sparked by an old story. We'll talk about that in a moment. Dr. Noyce is here with me now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And I want to talk about this story that grabbed your interest. It was an article that was first published in 1892 by the Swiss geologist Dr. Albert Heim. Tell me about this article.
Well, when I joined the faculty, I became interested in the experiences of dying patients. And I got to reading about this in the old literature of the 19th century. And I came across some accounts of people who had nearly drowned or other accidents, and was quite interested in that. And then came across this article by Albert Heim. As you say, he was a famous geology professor, and he had collected 30 accounts of people who had fallen in the Alps or suffered similar accidents and lived to tell what they had experienced. In fact, he was prompted to do this by his own accident. He was leading a small band of climbers in the Alps one day, and a gust of wind blew off his hat, and he made the mistake of lunging for it and slipped and went over a cliff down to what he presumed would be his death on the rocks below. But in fact, he landed in a drift and soon revived to tell what he had experienced. He said that the experience of people was quite similar, and not the terrifying thing that you might suppose, but occurred in calmness and peace. And he presented this as a way of consolation to families of survivors.
To know that their loved one didn't necessarily die in fear and panic.
That's right. And I was fortunate to obtain this article, and my colleague Roy Kletty translated it from the German. It was quite remarkable. I showed it to some of my colleagues, and they were skeptical. And I thought perhaps I should begin to gather accounts myself and see if this was true.
And what did he say happened in his article? He shared these other stories, but what did he say happened in his mind as he was falling?
Well, he reported, as many people do, that his mind was aroused. He was thinking rapidly. At the same time, he felt detached, and there was a calmness rather than fear.
And he felt hyper-aware of his surroundings.
Yes. He experienced a review of memories, finally a resignation, almost a religious experience.
And when he collected the stories of other people who had nearly died, he found similarities.
That's right.
Now, you said that you were interested in dying patients. What was it about patients who were at the end of their lives that you wanted to find out?
From reading Heim's article, it seemed important to understand that accident experiences are accompanied by calm rather than fear.
Well, you had said that before even reading his article, you were interested in the end-of-life experiences of the patients at the hospital. This was a time when that wasn't something that people really talked about,
well,
was it?
That's right. That was a time when people were denying death. And if someone had a fatal or terminal illness, nobody talked to them about it. There was a psychiatrist, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who began doing that and found patients anxious to tell her what others didn't want to hear. This is what got me into it. What are people experiencing, and how might a psychiatrist help them?
Yeah. When you started reading about near-death experiences, you started looking for stories on your own. How did you go about gathering people's near-death experience stories?
It was informal. A colleague's wife had nearly drowned when she was a youngster. I interviewed her. Chairman of my department had been struck by lightning. I spoke to him about this. And I began to gather accounts. I developed a questionnaire for people to take. And then I did put some advertisements in a climbing journal, in the Daily Iowan. And as I accumulated accounts, interviewed people, and had their interviews transcribed, the news media became interested, and I began to receive letters from people. All of this is rather informal, and I can't say that all of the experiences were the same. A few were traumatic, although most were quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite, that sense of peace that Albert Heim talked
yes.
about in his article. As you were collecting these stories, I mentioned earlier, people seem to have a fascination with near-death experiences. And really, the beginning of your research was the beginning of kind of a popular peak of interest in near-death experiences. The kind of thing where someone is possibly nearing death due to a serious illness, the story that we hear frequently told of the white light or moving through a tunnel, maybe an encounter with the supernatural. You categorize that as a different kind of near-death experience than the kind that people have when they encounter near death in a sudden way, in an accidental way. What's the difference?
I was more interested in accident experiences. That might be classified as under the heading of near death, but don't often have the tunnel, the being of light, the encounter with previously deceased relatives. But they may experience a review of memories. They may have thoughts about their death and the life that they're leaving behind. They may feel as though they're controlled by an outside force. And at some point, they come to a resignation. It may be even a blissful resignation. And there may be religious elements in the whole experience.
People seemed to be very eager to tell you their stories. Why do
yes.
you think that is? Why is this something that people were so eager to share with you?
Well, one of the things that most interested me was the after effects of these experiences. People often said that they were transformed. They lost their fear of death. They felt that they had survived because they were meant to survive, as though God or fate had intervened and that they had a special purpose in life. They might not know what this purpose is, but they felt they had it, and their life ahead was assured. So these were no ordinary experiences. the thing that I think most fascinated me about them.
You mentioned the religious experience that a lot of people have in this instance. Did you interview people who had a religious awakening through this? They previously maybe didn't believe in God, but then went through something like this and changed their feelings?
I would say more the religious experience reflected beliefs that they had beforehand. Some people felt that the detachment was a separation of their soul from their body. The outside force might have been God. Some felt, I remember a lady who survived an automobile accident said she felt that it was a miracle that she survived, but she said, "I don't believe in miracles." It was as though the hand of God came down and rescued me, but I don't believe in God. So there were some reflections on religious themes like that.
Some people feel that stories like these are, quote, scientific evidence for the existence of God. How do you react to that?
I'm skeptical about that. I think people who have the experiences come away believing strongly what they do. To say that there's scientific evidence, I think, goes too far.
Are you a religious person?
I am.
From that perspective, how did hearing all of these stories inform your beliefs?
I think I was moved by people when they told me how God had intervened in their lives. They were witnesses to me of important beliefs, and I think I was influenced by that.
I'm talking with Dr. Russell Noyce about near-death experiences. We'll continue our conversation and bring in a couple of other perspectives in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about near-death experiences. In a few minutes, we'll hear the story of one man's near-death experience. And we'd also love to hear from you. Is this something you've experienced? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now is Dr. Russell Noyce. He is an emeritus professor of psychiatry at the Carver College of Medicine at the University of Iowa. He's been collecting stories of near-death experiences since the 1970s. And Dr. Noyce, as a scientist in collecting these stories, I realize that you started in an informal way, but you've collected more than 200 of these stories. What do you think they can tell us, those of us who haven't had an experience like this? What should we take away from these stories?
Well, I think Albert Heim was right that perhaps the most important message is that the last moments of life may be peaceful and even meaningful. We think of traumatic events leading to post-traumatic stress disorder, but here are people who are facing traumatic circumstances and deal with them successfully. So I think it tells us something about human adaptability. People are curious about these experiences because they're nothing like they've had before. And they're often reluctant to speak about them for fear of being thought mentally ill.
Sure.
And it's helpful to be able to tell them what you experienced has been shared by many.
It is comforting to think about those last moments of life as a peaceful experience. I'm curious, on a personal level for you, I recently lost a dear friend who was only 49 years old, and as heartbroken as I am about that, it makes me more determined to live my life to the fullest. I think that's an experience that a lot of people have had. And this sort of life-affirming part of having had a near-death experience can be very powerful for people. For a researcher collecting these stories, how did that change how you lived or how you felt about your life?
Well, these people commonly say that they live more in the moment, that it's important to live fully. A lot of people waste their lives with concern about the future. Many lives are troubled by fear of death, which can be a part of everyday life. People are afraid to take risks. They fear that when the telephone rings, it's going to be bad news about a family member. They can't tolerate looking at dead bodies. Fear of death can intrude itself into everyday life and rob one of a certain amount of life, and that's what these people are talking about.
Did that change how you feel about your life to encounter so many people?
Well, I think so. I think I've incorporated that message.
You collected all of these stories, but you've never published them. Why?
I've published a number of articles, probably a dozen, early in my career. After I retired, I thought I might publish a small book that would contain the words of these people. And I went ahead and I did some writing, but I was then told by a lawyer that I could be sued. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, it wasn't usual to get a signed release of information.
Sure.
And people writing letters would likely not have responded. So I haven't published it. But I enjoyed writing about it nevertheless.
Are you still collecting stories?
No. No, I have the file of the 200, and it remains intact.
If you could share them with people, what's the most important thing you want somebody to take away from these stories?
Well, there are several things, but I think, again, what Haim said, fear of death is a widespread thing, and back in earlier times, people were afraid of being buried alive. And the very thought of this was fear-generating. And I think hearing stories from people who've had accidents could be comforting.
Yeah. Have you ever had a near-death experience?
No, I have not. That's all right.
Yes. Dr. Noyce, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Dr. Russell Noyce, an emeritus professor of psychiatry at the Carver College of Medicine at the University of Iowa. He started collecting the stories of near-death experiences back in the 1970s, specializing in the stories of people who nearly died accidental deaths. We are talking about near-death experiences this hour, and we'd love to hear from you if this is part of your experience. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to introduce Lonnie Parrott now. She's a social worker and has studied and collected stories of near-death experiences. She's brought people together to hear these stories from 2000 to 2004. 1994, she held monthly meetings in Iowa City under the auspices of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. Guest speakers were people who had near-death experiences and shared them with the audience. She's also taught classes at the Johnson County Senior Center and lectured to senior nursing students at Coe College in Cedar Rapids, teaching nurses how to respond to patients who reveal their near-death experiences. Lonnie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And tell me, how did you get interested in near-death experiences?
In 1975, a close friend of mine handed me the book Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody. She said, you've got to read this. And sometimes it truly happens that a book can change your life. And I just thought it was fascinating. I, from there, went to the library, to bookstores, constantly looking for whatever else was coming out about the subject. There were many books written after that by Dr. Kenneth Ring and many other, especially physicians, who were interested and had, you know, had patients or their own near-death experience. And then, of course, personal accounts like Betty Eady, Danion Brinkley, others, wrote a whole book describing what happened to them. And I just ate it all up, and I was very, very interested from then on.
So you were fascinated, as many of us are, because we don't know what happens when we die. But was there something in particular about those stories that made you want to find out more, to pursue this?
Well, I was raised in a Christian conservative, with a Christian conservative background, and, you know, I never had my questions answered the way I would have liked to understand about life. And for some reason, I just felt like I found all the answers I was looking for in people's accounts of what happened after they had, quote, died. So it really appealed to me as a new understanding. And
so, and you set out then to facilitate the telling of these stories. Why was that important to you?
Well, I was frustrated for decades that nobody would come to an Iowa City situation and speak of their NDE, near-death experience. And I just wish that somewhere you'd see accounts on TV, but you would never get to hear someone. And I just was frustrated and finally realized that probably if anyone was going to have to do anything with near-death experience, it might have to be me. So that's what I did. And I was working in my husband's dental office, and I put on the wall a little note that said, have you had a near-death experience, or do you know someone who's had one? And patients would come in and see that and come up to my desk just wanting to tell me so many things about maybe an out-of-body experience they'd had, about deathbed visions their loved ones had had, about an NDE they knew of with someone else. And the accounts were so amazing. I realized there's so much people are not speaking about, not sharing. So it gave me motivation again to contact IANS, the International Association that sponsors groups. And I was then launched into my monthly NDE group.
And when I was talking to Dr. Noyce, the kinds of near-death experiences that he collected, as I mentioned, were tended to be things that were the result of an accident, a sudden experience that sent someone to the brink of death. You are different and you're interested in different kinds of near-death experiences. Tell me what you've been seeking.
The kind of near-death experiences I have been interested in are really the ones that, you know, typically might have been a cardiac arrest where a physician is reviving the person because there's no heartbeat and no brain activity or whatever. There really is evidence that the person had died. And every near-death experience is different, just like we live lives differently on Earth. We go back and have different NDEs. However, there are common elements in all of those accounts, many of which are, you know, finding yourself floating outside your body, often about the ceiling level. And if you're being revived or resuscitated, you're watching those efforts. Or if you've been in an accident, you might see the blood on your clothing from above. You have those feelings of incredible peace and comfort, and pain disappears, like Dr. Noyce said. You may move through a darkness or a tunnel toward a bright light that is loving and communicates unconditional love. You may meet spiritual beings, religious figures, especially deceased loved ones, and you always communicate telepathically with those deceased beings or religious figures. And you may have a life review where you see and relive everything you've done and the impact you had on everyone in your life from the moment of your birth, which can be totally transformative, as you can imagine. You may be told to go back, that it's not your time, or you may be given a choice as to whether to stay or go back. And you come back knowing that you have a job to do, that you're here for a purpose. And absolutely, there is never any fear of death once you have had a near-death experience.
You're speaking in absolutes, which I think is a difficult thing to do. I mean, you haven't spoken to every person who's ever had a near-death experience, but these are things that you find commonly in the stories that you've heard.
Yes.
And that you've encountered. I want to bring Gene Drazel into the conversation now. He's a chiropractor, lives in Lone Tree, Iowa, and has had a near-death experience many years ago. Gene, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, and it's interesting. I've contemplated the last few weeks when I knew I was going to be here about how I would speak about it now compared to 40 years ago. And, mine was different in the sense that mine was a suicide attempt. And I took a bottle of pills that I stole from my friend, my roommate, and I took them and went out to a park to die. And apparently went into a coma. I was found, and they pumped my stomach, and I guess a couple of days I was inert. And from my perspective, when I realized as I was leaving my body, I watched my body in the hospital bed, and I went, oh, well, I must have pulled it off. And, there was all kinds of things in my childhood that I don't know really how to make sense out of. I had seizure disorder, I had concussions, I had physical traumas, not because I was beaten, because I was just an adventurous child. And but there was a lot of other things that I couldn't make sense of. And that difference caused a great anxiety in me, great feeling of guilt. And my mother had been an abused child on the streets at age 12 and had me by the time she was 15 or 16. And so I was around all the wrong kind of modeling. She never recovered from all of that, ran away from beatings from a drunken father. And her mother died when she was 10, and she had four younger siblings to try to take care of. And she couldn't take the beatings anymore, and she ran away. Well, living with that concept of men was not, didn't work for me. And so I got to the point where that was the age of when LSD was coming around and psilocybin and all these hallucinogens. And the problem was we didn't have mentors for educational experiences, which it could have been. And luckily, I was blessed. I had all kinds of great experiences, but when I came back into my body then, I couldn't make sense of the negativity and the darkness that was in my life. And that's what caused me to try to kill myself.
So you were experiencing this deep depression. You were in what, your mid-20s at this time?
24.
24 years old.
Yeah.
You also had just gone through a divorce.
Yeah.
So it was a dark, difficult time in your life. I'd love for you to, you wound up in the hospital. You know that you were comatose for a couple of days, but you remember you're seeing your body lying there. What else happened to you?
Well, I call it a generic near-death experience, but as I floated out of the room, I didn't stop at the ceiling. I floated into darkness, and there was a presence over my right shoulder that it's interesting to me, I never turned to look. I just had this out-of-body communication with this being. And the being said, well, you were given this life. What do you think? Let's watch it and see. And I got to watch all of the negative things again. But behind it, I saw the miracle of life. Clear, beautiful, and realized that what I was carrying around was memories. And I was the only person that could change it. I couldn't change what had been done to me, but I could change how I responded. And I saw love, and I saw beauty, and I saw light. And when this conversation went on, after I viewed my life, which seemed to take forever, it asked me what I thought about how I did. I said, I did a crappy job. I did a horrible job. And I don't know if I have a choice, but if I do, I would like to go back.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to hear more about your story. Gene Drazel, he lives in Lone Tree, Iowa, experienced a near-death experience several decades ago. Also with me right now is Lonnie Parrott, and she's studied near-death experiences, brought people together to share their stories of near-death experiences. We'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about near-death experiences. And we'd love to hear from you if this is something that's been part of your experience or if you'd like to talk to my guest. Lonnie Parrott is here. She studied social work, but she also has been collecting stories of near-death experiences for a number of years, has brought people together to hear these stories. From 2000 to 2004, she held monthly meetings in Iowa City under the auspices of the International Association for Near-Death Studies and brought guest speakers who'd had near-death experiences to her audiences. Also with me this hour is Gene Drazel. He's a chiropractor from Lone Tree, Iowa, and has experienced a near-death experience. And Gene, just before the break, you were sharing your story, and you had what Lonnie was referring to as a life review, where you looked back at your life, and you were seeing your experiences, you were seeing things that happened in your life, but it sounds like you were seeing them from a different perspective.
Right. Well, I realized that I had assumed a victim state, and all this stuff had been done to me. And yet, what that experience brought out to me is that I have a choice, and that I can choose to live with those problems or grow beyond them. And so forever, every day since then, for almost 40 years, I've remembered that.
Yeah. You say you chose to come back.
Well, I asked to come back.
You asked to come back. And what was your sense of returning? What happened then?
Well, I've tried to explain what I heard and what I felt on the way back. It was, to me, sounded like a robot cricket. And when I started listening to those sounds, they became words, and they became sentences, and they became, and I looked down and somebody was reading to me, sitting on my bed. And I knew exactly who it was. Well, I knew what he was reading. I knew who that was. It was T.R.D. Chardin talking about the Omega Point. And when I woke up, I asked the nurse, I said, who was reading to me on my bed? And she said, sir, you've had no visitors. No one knows you're here. And then I had to make a serious decision about not talking about it, as far as I was concerned.
Because you were in a psych ward.
Right.
So you were concerned that if you shared what had happened, that you wouldn't be allowed to
right.
leave.
And
so you had had this severe depression. You had tried to take your life, but you felt like your depression lifted as a result of this experience?
Well, I felt that I had tools, the awareness, to work with it. And I was never depressed again to that level. And call it situational depression or whatever, I vowed that I was not going to try to commit suicide ever again, because that was stupid for me, and that I had possibly a lot to offer. And I became pretty regularly enthusiastic. And it was a long time before I looked up the history of that word. Entheos, from Greek, it means to be filled or bathed in God. And that was a big turning point for me, because part of my negativity about the church was from a minister who abused me. And so I didn't hold it against religion after that. I just knew he was a troubled guy, went on. And so it gave me the tools. It's not that I didn't face depression. I would get up sometimes depressed, but I would say, look, you've got a choice here. And it left. And the brain is plastic. And even though I had to work at it, it didn't make me a perfect person. But I had the tools to face each day.
You didn't tell anyone about this experience.
For 10 years.
For 10 years. Why didn't you tell anybody?
Well, I was afraid of being considered a kook, a nut. Then I started reading ancient literature about shamanic education in primitive cultures, and they had very set ways to help people deal with these things. And so that was my therapy, and anthropology. And so it was really helpful, but yet I was still very reluctant, you know, trying to look like a regular, normal human being, you know, one that didn't taste eternity and survive it, you know.
When was the first time you actually told somebody this story?
Well, it's interesting, because I volunteered on suicide call lines for a number of years, but I still wasn't able to talk about it. And finally, all this literature started coming out, and I started reading it, and I went, okay, now it's time you can talk about it with some safety. And so I started talking. Now, I've been very restrictive over the years. I haven't gone out on the street corners. I think the first real public time I ever talked about it was Lonnie's gatherings. Slowly but surely. But then when I came across relatives or loved ones who were very sick, then I had a chance to talk about some of these things. And I had a wonderful experience with my wife's dying mother at 90. I could talk anything with her, and I think it was real comforting to her to have me talk about these things. Yeah.
Gene Drazel had a near-death experience about 40 years ago. He shared his story with us. Lonnie Parrott is here, who's collected many stories and studied these stories over the years. We'd love to hear from you as well, 866-780-9100. Will is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Will.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I was just wondering if your guests would distinguish between a near-death experience and common or garden out-of-body experience, one not related to trauma.
Okay, so an out-of-body experience, feeling like you're separated from your body, you can see yourself. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Well, Lonnie, can you help us understand that a little bit? The difference, perhaps, between a phenomenon of experiencing an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience? It sounds like the out-of-body element is something that's part of a lot of these stories.
It is, and I think it ends for some people just as an out-of-body experience. However, then they are left with the understanding that they are not their body, that there is something different going on. But a near-death experiencer goes on to have probably quite a few more elements that are common to NDEs. Maybe he could tell us what happened in his out-of-body.
Will?
Mine was pretty mundane, really. I was in my late teens. I was just cleaning my teeth one evening, and I became aware that I was in two places at once. Part of me was performing the nightly ritual, and part of me was kind of perched up on the ceiling, just looking down, very detached, kind of observational style. And then later on, my eldest son, he was 4 or 5 at the time, someone had asked when he was at a sleepover, and one of the parents had asked him what makes him happy. They were trying to settle the kids down. He just said, well, I like to lie on the grass and float up and look down at myself.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was interesting. You never really elaborated on it, but
very interesting.
How common it was,
right? And we don't know either. But Will, thank you so much for sharing with us today. Let's go to Brian on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Brian.
Hi. How are you, Charity?
Good. And you've had a near-death experience?
I did. Actually, coming up on the 15-year anniversary this next week. I had been hiking the Grand Canyon, actually, in July, which was probably not the smartest idea. And I was at the bottom, and I got some sort of an illness, and I wasn't able to keep any food or water down for about 2 days, and it was close to 120 degrees, and there was a lot of debate about what I should do between some rangers and stuff while I was down there, and the best option at the time was to try and hike out before I got any worse and with what remaining energy I had, and unfortunately I didn't make it very far, made it about a mile, and I collapsed in a small shelter, and I had to left in that moment, I guess I left my body, and I could see myself from not just floating, but I could see the whole space, the whole canyon, from almost every angle, and I remember a person came and helped me calm down, I guess you could say, and I remember coming back almost as if I had died and started over again in a way, and this person then helped me, walked with me for the rest of the afternoon, and then about after a certain point that person left, and it took 18 hours, and I got out to the top at 11 o'clock at night and passed out again and had another similar experience and then woke up in a hospital. So it was an interesting experience.
And when you talk about there being a person there, do you believe that was a physical human being that you encountered that helped you, or was that part of what you're calling a near-death experience?
I guess I've never really known. I haven't spoken to too many people about it. It just kind of, and some of it comes back in different ways, but, you know, it's kind of, I don't know. I think about it a lot. The whole experience was very much surreal. It was almost as if it was an 18-hour hike I walked through heat exhaustion, dehydration, and then it was monsoon season. So a rainstorm came through and dropped the temperature into the 50s, and I ended up with hypothermia. And the doctors essentially said that it was impossible. It shouldn't have happened. And so I've never really understood. But I just remember it was very peaceful, and at least in that first moment after I kind of collapsed and had the out-of-body experience, there was just this feeling that you're connected to kind of everything around you, and mm-hmm. It was very very impactful, I guess, at 17.
How do you think it changed you?
You know, I'm not as afraid of dying. I think it's just life is such an interesting and beautiful thing, and really it's just made me think about how I interact with other people and the relationships that I have while I'm here, and you know, you never know what's around the corner, and so just make the most of the time that you've got, and see what happens when your time is up, I guess. So.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And Lonnie, one of the things that Brian mentions, that lack of fear of death, that seems to be something that comes back again and again, both in the stories collected by Dr. Noyce and in the stories that you've been talking about. We have another email here from Maya who says, my near-death experience occurred about 15 years ago in a hospital in Iowa City on the operating table. I was given a dye I was allergic to. I spent 500 years building a bamboo temple in the mountains. One day I was climbing a hillside and I slipped on a mossy rock. I fell backwards and a voice came close to me and whispered that I couldn't go yet as I had a family. I looked up and saw two black spheres. They were black paddles the male nurse used to revive me. I looked up at his face and smiled and said, thank you. I lost all fear of dying after that. I mentioned this to a friend and found that he had had a number of near-death experiences. Maya says, I'm not religious. God is not on my menu. And Jesus to me is a quaint anecdote. But I do have theories about death, and I think it doesn't matter much. It seems a trivial thing, really. So that lack of fear of death does seem to be something that comes back again and again, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that was one of the main things I thought was a benefit to me to understand, and that I wanted to share that also with others in some ways.
You have shared what you've learned with nursing classes at Coe College in Cedar Rapids. What do you want nurses and medical professionals to know about near-death experiences?
Medical professionals are most likely to be right there when someone has an emergency of some kind health-wise. And if they have never heard about an NDE or they don't understand it, it's very likely that they might say things that will mean the person who had the NDE will be unable to speak about it for a long, long time. That initial reaction is very important to them. And so I was trying to teach the classes to understand how important it is for them just to listen openly to what the person experienced, have no judgment about it, but just give them the understanding from yourself, as well as perhaps saying, I know of other people who have had this happen, you're not the only one, and perhaps have a book or a pamphlet that describes near-death experiences there in their practice so that they can right away help that person to get on the right track with what they've had happen.
Well, and Jean, that reminds me of what you were saying earlier, that you never shared this with anybody for 10 years because you thought that they would think you were crazy. Mm. And there are many skeptics out there, but it strikes me that regardless of whether this is a psychiatric experience or what would be considered a real experience, it's an incredibly powerful experience to the person who goes through it. So in many ways, that doesn't matter.
It is transformative. It completely changes their lives. Some say it's that an old life ended and a new one began after my NDE. So it is profoundly changing.
Have you ever had a near-death experience?
Not at all. Nope.
But it sounds like learning about these has been a profound experience for you.
Absolutely. And I think anyone who hears of it and looks into it a bit and reads about accounts can really change their own lives. We can become like little beings of light, as Kenneth Ring would say, and understand what NDEers have learned on their own.
Well, Lonnie Parrott, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Lonnie Parrott has studied near-death experiences, read a great deal about them, brought audiences together to learn about near-death experiences, and also lectured senior nursing classes at Coe College in Cedar Rapids, teaching nurses how to respond to patients who reveal their near-death experiences. Jean Drazel, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. And, you know, the learning goes on, and it's a joy to find out how much we're finding out about you don't need a trauma to have these experiences.
Well, Jean, thank you so much. Jean Drazel of Lone Tree. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.